It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to the Tarncast. I am your host, Gorf Gusselson, and I'm very excited this episode. We've got somebody finally on the show. We've been trying to book for some time, and schedules, you know, it just didn't work out, but now we've got him, and I'm very excited to welcome Todd Robert Anderson to the Tarncast. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, thanks for having me, Gorf.
Yeah, it's really a thrill, because everyone here at the Tarncast is a big fan of your work. On the big screen and the small screen.
Well, that's very nice.
So yeah, we're very excited to have you here. And how are things going for you these days?
They're going okay. Yeah. You know, just working, being with the fam. You know, hanging out with friends.
It's fascinating.
Doing lots of pet projects.
Pet projects are important.
Yeah, well, I learned that from Bill Paxton.
Yeah, it's important to keep busy.
Yeah, you got to keep busy.
What I'd like to talk with you about in this episode of the Tarncast is, you know, a lot of people don't know that actors, professional actors, often have outside interests. Mm. You know, outside of the world of acting, of movie magic, if you will. And they have more, sometimes even more scientific interests and endeavors. Like, for example, like Brad Pitt is really into architecture.
Sure.
And he's an avid student of architecture. Mm-hmm. Natalie Portman has a degree in psychology.
Yep.
She authored a scientific paper when she was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, I'd like to spend some time talking with you about your area of scientific expertise in that vein, which is, of course, eugenics.
Right. Yes.
And I just like to...
You'd like to what? You want to talk about eugenics and what I've been doing.
And your fascination with eugenics and how you got involved with the field of eugenics.
Well, you should probably explain to the people what eugenics...
very simply is a process, and there are different forms of it, but the basic process is selective breeding within a population to produce a desired evolutionary result.
Right.
And so it's a way to, some might say, play God.
Mm-hmm,
Some might also call it evil.
Right. Well, I mean, and I think a lot of people kind of associate that concept with, you know, Hitler, Nazi Germany.
Yes, that's
ethnic cleansing.
Yes, that's also like generally.
There's a lot of negative press about eugenics, and you know, I think in historically speaking, you know, people have misused the science.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
Well. You know, I mean, Hitler, while the science is solid, Hitler misinterpreted what eugenics should be used for.
I see.
He wanted to create a race of blonde, blue-eyed, gorgeous people.
The Superman. The Superman. Ubermensch.
But he was thinking of it... looks-based.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is ironic, considering what a horrible little troll he looked like.
Well, maybe he was overcompensating.
Perhaps.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But we can't look at eugenics the same way we look at casting a major Hollywood motion picture. You can't...
Why not?
You can't... Well, you can't do it all based on looks. That's not what eugenics is for. So what we want to do is we want to figure out the right people to breed and create children, not according... We don't want... If they have blonde hair and blue eyes across the board, so much the better.
If that just happens to work out, that is
a side effect of what we're trying to do with the Eugenics Foundation that I've started.
Which is called again?
It's called Anderson Eugenics.
I see. Yes, of course. I don't know why I forgot that.
Honestly, I didn't want to use that name, but because of my fame and popularity, they wanted to put the name Anderson.
Right. So they
because
could really...
it really it's such a specific name and unique, and they knew it would like people would picture me right away.
It's a brand recognition thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'm I'm known to be like a boy next door. Unthreatening,
yeah.
Superstar, like a new Tom Hanks is basically what I am.
Right.
And to have that name next to eugenics really kind of dispels a lot of the bad press it's gotten through the years.
It really balances out the Hitler rap.
Yeah. It really kind of, they're trying to separate eugenics from Hitler as much as possible.
Which is a challenge.
It's a big challenge.
It's mostly a PR challenge, I would think.
It's all PR. Yeah. The science, again, is sound. So what we're trying to do, is create stronger human beings.
Right. Like physically, like superheroes or bulletproof people or people who can fly or read minds.
We're not.
Or shoot ray beams
from
their eyes.
We're against mutants.
So you're anti-mutant.
We're anti-mutant. That's not what we're trying to create. We're not trying to create superheroes.
So no X-Men.
No, we're not trying to create X-Men. We're trying to create a regular person.
Amen.
Amen.
Because Anderson.
Right. Amen. And hallelujah. Yes, you know what I'm saying? So what we're
trying to do, might not be PR-wise. Then people, that might latch onto like a playing God kind of thing. That might not be the way to go.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to talk to the
people. I'm not in public relations.
And
that's not my expertise.
That's not my thing either. I've lent my name to the thing because it seemed like the right thing to do. I just listen to the PR people. I pretty much do what they say. They do the PR. I'm about the science of the thing. So we're trying to just create people who don't have any ailments, who don't show any age. They don't wrinkle. They live for a long time.
Yeah.
Leave behind a really attractive corpse.
Right.
Because that's what we're all gunning for in the end. Nobody likes a withered, old, crappy corpse.
It's gross.
Yeah, especially at, Catholic wakes where you view the body.
Oh yeah, no, you don't want like a twisted old pretzel. You don't want to see that in a casket.
No, you want as good looking a corpse as possible.
You want to look in that casket and go, I don't believe he's dead.
Yeah, I can't. That's what you want when you're crying and looking at a dead friend or relative.
Yeah.
You want to say, I can't believe he's gone.
Yeah.
But so often at these Catholic wakes, you look at that person and go, well, that's a dead person.
Clearly dead.
That's a wrinkly, old, dead person.
And repulsive, and I don't want to look at them.
Right. And so that's what that's like one of the things we're trying to do. And also, getting to that important stage of a good looking corpse can be a lot more comfortable if you don't suffer from allergies.
Mm-hmm.
Your immune system fights off colds and flus without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Cancer. I mean, you talk about a cure for cancer. A cure for AIDS, a cure for really all the things that plague humanity, world starvation, genocide. Like once we've created this race of perfect people, none of those things will happen because everyone will be happy. They'll be healthy. There'll be no crankiness happening.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. So that's what we're going for. Not, we're not about how the people look. We're not about skin color or hair color or any of that.
You just, whatever they look like, you want them to maintain a young, healthy sheen.
Right.
Even after death.
Right, exactly. And I think, when creating the perfect human being, it's just a natural thing that they'll, be easy on the eye and attractive.
Yeah, I don't see how you can avoid doing that while trying to force nature to create the perfect human.
Right. And, and it's like beyond that, looking at you, if we crossed your right genes with the right genes from somebody else, your children would grow up with full heads of hair their whole lives.
I would expect so.
So they wouldn't have to deal with the shame and torture of a hair loss and feeling old as a result.
I would expect science to fix that for my children.
Science will. If my eugenics company is allowed to...
Anderson Eugenics.
Anderson Eugenics is allowed to prosper.
Now, how did you first get interested in eugenics?
Well...
As a subject.
As a subject. Well, it started for me... you know, I have developed a I have chronic pain.
Yes.
I'm a chronic pain sufferer. And I went through a lot trying to fix the chronic pain and ultimately realized there's not much I can do at this point about my chronic pain. But maybe if I breed myself correctly, then my children will not suffer from this. But how to do that? Because it just seems like such a crapshoot, you know, to just throw your dork in somebody and shoot your sperm in there.
It's total crapshoot.
And you don't know what's going to come out.
No.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
You know? It could be anything. I mean, obviously it's going to be human, but sometimes humans come out and they're just, the babies are awful to look at.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's nothing I dislike more than having to look at a baby I think is ugly.
Yeah. Ugly babies. I think it's like the bookend. You know, you don't want your baby to be ugly.
Right.
You don't want your baby's corpse to look ugly
yeah,
when it dies at an old age.
Because it's really hard to love something that's ugly.
It really is. I mean, I think we all have experienced trying to understand or love somebody who is ugly.
Yeah, and it's so taxing. It's the energy it takes.
And we live in a politically correct age where people forgive a lot. You know, or they don't, you know, talk negatively about someone, you know, such as yourself being bald.
Yes.
You know, there aren't people on the street yelling, "Hey, what's up, baldy?"
Yeah. Why don't you die? Because you got no hair, you piece of garbage.
Yeah, you look like garbage.
Yeah.
Right. And nobody does that because it's politically correct date.
Yeah.
But obviously, I mean, I'm sure you've realized that the subtext of conversation.
Oh, it's clear everyone's thinking that.
Everybody thinks it.
Yeah.
So eugenics, we're using this to get rid of that subtext. So that subtext doesn't exist. There'll be no reason for political correctness anymore because everyone will be naturally
in a good place. The population will have been forcibly bred by science to be acceptable to one another.
Right, exactly. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
this is a perfect...
It's fascinating.
That would be a perfect world.
Now, there are some people, we'd have to call them detractors, that would say, you know, what you're doing with eugenics, with Anderson Eugenics, your company, is simply playing God with the human race and trying to control evolution and control the forces of nature, which intrinsically simply cannot be controlled. And what you're doing can only result in terrible monsters and violence.
Right.
What would you say to those detractors?
Well, obviously, they haven't stepped into the Anderson Eugenics labs.
Mm-hmm.
And the science in there is tight. It's tight science. This is a lot of people think I'm playing God or I have a God complex just because my first name rhymes with God.
Right.
But that's untrue. I don't consider myself God. I'm not playing God. I think obviously, you know, there's a lot about me that's better and smarter
than most people.
Yes.
I think most people would agree with that statement.
I think they would. And I think what you need to keep in mind is even though that's the case, that doesn't mean I think I'm God.
Mm.
It doesn't even, you know, maybe I'm doing God's work.
Yeah.
Sure. But I've been gifted with certain things. Incredible intelligence, love of science, full head of hair, all these things combined together that make me better than other people. But if I just walk through life better than everybody else and I don't try to also make them better, then, you know, what's the point of living?
So, yeah. So essentially, you know, what you've been doing with your interest and your commitment to eugenics, it's almost sounds like it's more of a calling with you to want to make the world a better place, whether it likes it or not.
It is. It is a calling for me. And I think because the world is made up of, I mean, I think the vast majority of the population are not, like, great people. In a lot of cases, not even good people.
Right.
And I don't mean that moralistically. I mean, you know, they're just kind of shitty. Poorly put together, poorly built.
Just shoddy
workmanship. Yeah, their minds don't work right.
Yeah.
You know, and that leads to a lot of scuffling and unnecessary sexual relations that have bad results,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because I live this blessed life, except for the chronic pain, everything else about me is perfect. I want everybody else to be able to experience that and more than me. I don't want them to be perfect but have chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be perfect and not have any pain.
Tell me about the different programs you have at the at Anderson Eugenics at the Institute.
Well, you mean the programs of where we call our people from, where we get our genetics. I mean, there's
broad strokes, because I mean, this is, you know, I mean, this is a show for the layman, so we don't want to get too scientific.
Okay.
With it. We want people to be able to process and understand what is the science that you use to practice eugenics.
Well, in the lab where the eugenics happen, mm-hmm. The team of scientists that I've gathered mm-hmm. together are working
hard. Now, did you handpick this team yourself, or do you have a committee? Or?
Well, no. I worked with a couple of scientists
mm-hmm.
That I found in various places in Eastern Europe.
In South America, I believe, too. Some of the older scientists that you've been working with are from South America.
There's a couple people.
They're very pale.
Very pale.
And they have a strange accent.
Yes.
But but they are from South America.
Yes. And I found a few more, like I said, in Eastern Europe.
Yes,
I was shooting in an Uwe Boll film, of all things, and I happened to be in a bar, and I started talking to these scientists, and I was like, oh, you should join these other scientists. So, like, there were like six or seven that I started with, but then they've brought in other people,
yes.
the lab technicians and all that. So I don't, you know, they're kind of managing the thing. I'm really just the face of it. I'm the, you know, again, I'm like the PR face of it. So they're doing a lot, but what's happening in the labs is, the scientists and the lab technicians are working on, they experiment with different, you know, genetic codes and mix and match and see, what comes out best.
Yeah.
Now, before, that's sort of the final process of experimentation. And really a lot of that is trial and error, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've made some, as you might say, monsters, but we put them down. I mean, we put them down.
There's no danger to the public.
There's no danger to the public.
Okay,
if a monster is made in the laboratory, they are put down.
Yeah.
You know, this is not Frankenstein's monster. These things don't leave the lab, you know. And we've kept a few alive who are, you know, almost perfect, people, but might have some slight, you know, behavioral things, violent streaks, whatever. We'll keep them alive in, you know, cages so we can watch them and monitor them and see.
Yeah, and learn and study.
Learn and study. The real grisly, you know, monsters you have to put down. It's just practical. But the other thing, outside of the lab, you know, there's all the stuff leading up to it. So we have recruitment specialists
mm-hmm.
who walk the streets.
Are those the guys that I saw when I took the tour.
Yeah.
Were those the guys that were in those black uniforms with the dart guns?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they patrol various cities and they talk to people. And if they find someone particularly intelligent,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, have had someone with a great physique, whatever, somebody who's got something genetically attractive, then...
Like a Bradley Cooper.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Then we try to recruit them into coming in and being a part of the genetic research. We do that. We have different ways of doing it. We have lots of, you might have noticed around LA, you know, we'll have a lot of storefronts,
mm-hmm.
that invite people in, to take, various tests. And we sell it a little bit as self-help because we think it is, you know, a self-help thing because this makes them better as people because they're trying to make the human race better. So that'll bring people in. And then we, you know, talk to them and give them a series of tests. And then if they're the genetic material we want, then we start a hardcore recruitment.
I also find interesting, and I actually kind of find this refreshing from a company, because companies are usually in your face with their branding and their advertisements, and it's, you just can't get away from their PR. But what I like about your recruitment for Anderson Eugenics is the nondescript storefronts.
Right.
The very low-key sales pitch.
Right.
And often, I can't even tell that you guys are out doing your thing looking for subjects because of your unmarked vans and your very drab clothing. It's very unnoticeable, low-key. One might even say covert.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's more out of politeness than some kind of conspiratorial thing. I've never been a fan of, you know, Super Bowl ads pushing stuff on me.
Course,
we never do a Super Bowl ad. We're not in your face. We believe that people will come to us more naturally because it is ultimately the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've recruited a lot of people who are helping us out. And they once they get past the personality tests and all that, we keep them I don't like to use the word farms. Maybe camp is it better. It's like a
camp's fun.
It's like a fun camp.
Yeah,
and they stay there in the facility, in the camp.
Yeah,
they have to stay there. I mean, like once you're recruited,
for the
you
science.
Have to stay in there for the science because if they leave, they can screw up a whole.
But I mean, on my tour, I also saw like you have your facility is state of the art. There's lots of like really clean surgical grade stainless steel appliances. It's very fancy and modern. You know, it's like just like living like a modern European hotel.
Right. That's exactly what it's right. And we keep all of the stuff that we use with our volunteers.
Yeah.
All of those tools that you saw. I mean, we keep very clean.
Now, I noticed that the floors in your facility were all concrete and had lots of drains in them.
They do.
Why is that?
Well, genetic experiments are complicated.
Yeah.
And sometimes various fluids are extracted. And sometimes when those fluids are extracted, the wounds that develop from the extraction can be extreme, and there can be a lot of fluid loss. And it's important to have the drain so we can hose that.
So that's
fluid
just for
loss.
Medical reasons.
Yeah. It's for sanitation.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
and I see nothing alarming about that at all.
No, you shouldn't be alarmed.
Now, can you tell us how your interest and participation in eugenics? Mm-hmm. Has informed your acting?
Well, it's actually pretty interesting in that a lot of the people that we've created from these genetics experiments will have something very specific to their personality.
Yes.
And sometimes it's like the only element to their personality. So if they are angry or worried.
Yes.
It's like that emotion all the time. And if I spend time with those people, I start feeling only that emotion. If you hang out with somebody who's constantly in a state of nervousness, you really start to feel that nervousness. And I can take that, you know, into my work. A lot of times I will take these people with me to set to spend time with me in my trailer.
It's almost like kind of like an acting eugenics.
It is.
It's like you're taking the best pieces of emotion from the people who are confined to your experiments.
Exactly.
And using them to inform your artistic work.
Exactly. So it's not, you know, and this is just a side benefit for me. But we do, you know, keep a number of these specimens alive for me to cull, you know, but that's my career generates so much money.
Yes.
For the eugenics lab that's, you know, a necessary thing for me to keep working.
Now, one thing that I do find interesting about Anderson Eugenics mm-hmm. is that it's a company, it's not incorporated in the United States. It's actually got, its corporate headquarters is on the old oil tanker that's just outside, in international waters.
Right.
Like past the Channel Islands pass.
Right.
And I'm just curious, why is that?
Well, there's certain antiquated legislation
mm-hmm.
that keeps us from doing a lot of our experiments. And it's really just a matter of oversight on the government's part that they haven't removed these things from the books. But to keep my scientists and technicians out of prison,
yes,
we have to do our experiments out there. But obviously these experiments are more publicly accepted than they might have been in the past. I mean, a lot of these laws about these experiments have to do with Hitler, you know.
But
I think at this point, for the most part, the population is over the whole
Hitler
Holocaust
thing.
People have...
They're ready to move on, is what
they're
saying.
Past it, yeah. They've gotten past it.
Now, what do you say to the allegations that you actually have a secret undersea base somewhere along the equator where your real experiments are taking place?
Those are unfounded
mm-hmm.
Allegations. I do have an underwater base on the equator, but that is just a place where I get away. It's just a personal...
It's like a cabin, and, you know, it's a...
Yeah, it's like, think of it as a timeshare or something like that. It's where I go to unwind and get away from all the pressures of being an actor and running, you know, this eugenics lab. There's a lot of... It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of work. So I need a place where I can go and get away.
So that, I mean, that sounds perfectly reasonable. I don't think there's any more reason for anybody to worry about that undersea base.
No, there's nothing nefarious going on there. I mean, sometimes I'll take people from the camp with me
mm-hmm.
To enjoy a vacation.
Sounds actually like a treat.
Yeah, and sometimes they really like it there, so they stay
mm-hmm.
Indefinitely or permanently.
Yeah.
But that's, again, these are all volunteers. These are not people who are coerced or forced or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be a big relief to hear, I think, a lot of people. It's going to put that to bed, I think, that subject.
And remember, most of these people who are saying these things are conspiracy theorists.
Of course.
I mean, they're not scientists, real scientists.
No,
they develop opinions according to hearsay.
Well, but that's like, I mean, that's kind of the culture we live in right now. I mean, it's like, you know, there's always a villain of the week on Twitter, and you always got to take somebody down in social media,
right.
And, you know...
You know what these people are? Haters.
Exactly.
And haters...
They're going to hate.
They're going to hate.
And there's not much you can do about that. What do you see as the future of eugenics?
Well, I'm hoping to fast-track this.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it would be nice to see the fruits of my labor in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping in the next 30 years we will have created the perfect human being. And then we can introduce that into the world population and really start changing things over.
That's really – I mean, that's like a 30 – that's a pretty quick timetable.
It is a quick timetable, but I have – the guys I have out on the rig are geniuses at work in international waters. So, yeah, I'm confident that I will get to see the perfect world
before
I have to leave my mortal coil.
Well, that's fascinating. What would you say to the people who say there's no place for eugenics in a civilized society, and people should be allowed to breed with whoever they choose to breed with?
These people are... I mean, I don't know how else to say it. These people are savages. They're unevolved savages.
Mm-hmm.
For one, I mean, and I think it's just misplaced psychology.
Yeah.
This concept of rutting with whoever you want to rut with. That's not going to help the world. That's not going to help the world. You're going to make more human garbage. Let's stop doing that.
I mean, you look at the TV guide before you decide to turn on the TV, right?
You choose your programming.
Yeah.
You don't. This is what I'm saying. I mean, so many people, like, that's...
Like, channel surfing doesn't accomplish
We need to wipe channel surfing off the face of the planet. That needs to stop. The kind of person who can't sit down and make an educated choice about what they're going to watch and just hope to stumble across something, that's insanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts.
Because all that happens in that case is you just end up watching a rerun of Knight Rider.
Yeah, exactly. And what good does that do the world?
It does no one any good whatsoever.
Maybe David Hasselhoff gets a small residual check.
Maybe.
And the guy who voiced Kit. But beyond that, it's not helping anybody.
I think he died, though.
So, then we don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. And if, you know, your eugenics program had been in place to begin with, he might still be alive.
Yeah.
Assuming he died and isn't already still alive.
Right. And assuming he died, I'm imagining he died at an older age,
mm-hmm.
and he probably looked like a wrinkled mess
mm-hmm.
in his casket.
Yeah.
And in my new world, he'll look great.
When I die, I don't want to look like a bag of garbage, but I know I'm going to.
You can't avoid it. I mean,
yeah,
it's
too late for me.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's too late for you, but that doesn't mean that we can find something in your genetics that would be good for creating a super person.
Exactly. And that piece is what should be passed on, and everything else about me should be discarded.
Yes. This is what I'm saying. I mean, I think we all have those imperfections.
Yeah.
We would love to see discarded, gotten rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do.
I think that's it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the only thing standing in your way is democracy and human freedom. I don't know. Who can say?
Yeah, but people make too much of that. Democracy mm-hmm. and human mm-hmm. freedom. It doesn't really exist. Let's be honest. It doesn't exist because of greed.
Yes.
And that is one of the things that we want to genetically remove mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. the human race, is this greed and taking advantage of systems and making yourself rich and other people poor and all that stuff. That won't happen. That'll be gone.
Because everyone will be perfect.
Everyone will be perfect.
It sounds like a fantastic future.
I can't wait to be a part of it.
And, yeah, and...
In my lifetime.
Yeah, and your work is fascinating.
Thank you.
And again, I think it's something that, like, a lot of people... aren't aware of.
No.
A small group of people are aware of it and are very alarmed by it. But...
Yeah, but I think these are people who are having a knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
They're clinging to old ideas.
Yeah.
You know, the concept that everything that Hitler did was wrong.
Yeah. And you don't want to be Hitler.
No, I am not Hitler. And I certainly wouldn't do most of the things that Hitler did. Just a small... Excuse me. I got something
you okay? No, this we have a bad filter in the studio, so we get some dust in here once in a while. And makes it a little difficult sometimes.
Anyway, I only did doing a small fraction mm-hmm. of what Hitler did. And really, like, the nucleus of what Hitler did. Like, he spun off, like, in the rock, like, he got confused.
Yeah, no, I mean, he did a lot of things that were very unreasonable, and people are right to challenge him on.
Right, and I agree with people when they say Hitler was not good.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Well, yeah, no, it's... Sometimes, the good carpenter and a bad carpenter can use the same tools for different purposes.
Right. Well, and he made it all about, like, race and religion and all that. And I, that's not what we're about at Anderson Eugenics. We're not about race and religion. We believe that there are imperfections in people that need to be fixed across all races
right.
and all religions.
To create the new... super race of everybody.
Right.
That will supersede and destroy the current race.
Right. And that, and we're culling.
Yeah.
The right
things. But from everybody. All the
from
pieces.
From everybody. Yeah, yeah. And that's certainly not racist.
No, it's absolutely not.
No.
If anything, it's proist because you're making a whole new race.
We're all, and we're using all the races.
Yeah, everybody.
And all the religions to make the perfect
And isn't
person.
That really what the American melting pot is?
That's what, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is an American endeavor and an American, it is the most American thing that's ever happened in America.
It's fascinating. It's truly fascinating. So, what does the future hold for Todd Robert Anderson in particular?
Well, who knows? Nobody really knows what the future holds, but I like to think that I'll continue making the box office successes mm-hmm. that I mm-hmm. have and the great TV appearances that I've done in my acting career. And I hope eugenics, my eugenics, fixes the human race once and for all.
Well, that's just amazing. This has been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
I am truly grateful to my guest, Todd Robert Anderson. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
On this episode. Best of luck in the future to your acting endeavors and, of course, to Anderson Eugenics.
Yep.
And your master plan to remake the human race. I have been your host, Garf Gustelson. And I'd just like to thank everyone for listening to the Tomcast. We'll see you next time.